so glad to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about your empowerment with knowledge so that you can take control of your wallet and your future. I hope you gain ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Clark.com is our main web address. ClarkDeals.com is where you go to save money. We do what I feel is a great job, our deal diggers, finding the best deals in the market so that you spend your money wisely. Every time you think you're buying a bargain, I want you to know when you see one on Clark Deals, you are buying a bargain. When you listen to me, I want you to feel comfortable that the guidance, the advice I'm giving is right, that you can trust it. And there are times that you'll be listening and you'll feel like, I don't like the way Clark just answered that. I don't like the way that I talked about something. And so I want you to have an opportunity to give me that feedback. That's why we offer Clark Stinks. It's a forum at Clark.com where you go and post where your unhappiness is with me. And then others can see, they can add to it, they can comment on it. And weekly, our producer, Krista, goes through the posts on Clark Stinks and shares highlights with you right here on the air.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
Okay, I'm going to start with, you were definitely wrong. This is a correction we received.
Okay.
A rewards member of the Intercontinental Hotels Group emailed them, the company, to say that you had incorrectly talked about their company's name. Clark starts listing three big hotel chains with the largest loyalty programs and mentions Marriott / Starwood, then Hilton, then says he can't recall the third.
IHC.
We appreciate Clark mentioning our company among the list, but the correct name is actually IHG, which stands for Intercontinental Hotels Group. The listener asked us if Clark would be willing to correct the error on the air.
Perfect. So we've done so.
Okay. Jeff wrote in to say, wake up and smell the coffee, Clark. Your love of credit unions is misplaced, as the poor lady with the coins and baby illustrated the other day. Credit unions are transforming into the mega banks you rail against so frequently. Take a look. They have implemented the same fees and penalties. Maybe not the same extent as the mega banks, but they are definitely going in that direction. Your representation that they can do no wrong and the banks no right is misleading to your listeners. And that was Jeff in California.
Jeff, I am guilty as charged. I tend to paint with a broad brush, and most credit unions are small community-based credit unions. There are now some credit unions that are very, very large. There are some credit unions that have been infiltrated by banksters who used to work for banks, refugees from banks, and they lose sight of the fact that a credit union is a co-op, that they're there to serve their members that own the place and that they work for. So it is true, not all credit unions are perfect. Some are far from it.
Mary says, Clark did a story on TV about healthcare costs, and he referred to nurse in a box. Tell Clark he gets his facts to get his facts correct. These retail clinics utilize nurse practitioners, not nurses. A nurse practitioner has a graduate degree that authorizes diagnosis, treatment, and prescription of medications, including narcotics. In simplistic hospital terms, a nurse practitioner orders medicines, and the nurse hands the medication to the patient. Huge difference. Make sure you know the difference.
I appreciate that. I am a big fan of NPs, and I believe that NPs and PAs, physician's assistants, are the key two components of the solution we need to the shortage of primary care physicians in the United States. And we are not going to solve the shortage of primary care doctors any other way than with nurse practitioners and PAs.
Michael in Ohio wrote in and said, Clark, the other day you said Bitcoin was for money laundering and illegal activities. While I'm not an owner of Bitcoin because of security reasons, I realize people are flocking to it because of the lack of faith in fiat currency. Then you said it wasn't valid like our government's currency. We don't have a government currency. A private central bank known as the Federal Reserve prints fiat Federal Reserve notes. They're both fake. Why are so many countries stockpiling gold? Dollar collapse.
So I am not somebody who believes that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse, that any first world currency is going to collapse. And if there was ever a time that the currencies of developed countries were going to collapse, it was last decade during the banking scandals and the ensuing financial crisis caused by the dirty dealings of the banks. The U.S. dollar, Japanese yen, Swiss franc, the euro, the pound, they are all solid currencies. And there's no reason to believe that something invented by some computer programmer like Bitcoin is going to be more secure. Bitcoin has been through a lot of tumult, and I never wish to characterize Bitcoin as being only for nefarious activities. There are people who buy Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies believing they are an investment or a speculative thing or an alternative to real money. And if somebody wants to do that stuff, fine, but know that as an investment, any cryptocurrency is highly risky. Clark, it's something we're just going to have to disagree on.
Clark, your comments on nuclear power are a little extreme. You claim that nuclear power is failed technology. This is just wrong. The technology is not failed at all. It has been proven and continuously improved over the last 50 plus years in the U.S. New and existing nuclear power plants are struggling right now, mostly because of the extremely low natural gas prices, not because of failed technology. The technology works. It's just not the least expensive option right now.
I'm sorry if I mischaracterized my opinions about nuclear. Is I think I said in that I've always been a big fan of nuclear power. What I was referring to is that it's been a market failure. It's been in the two big construction projects that have been going on in the United States, in South Carolina and Georgia, both have failed the ratepayers of both of those states, leaving them on the hook for massive amounts of costs. And South Carolina has now abandoned its plants, and very likely Georgia will as well.
Clark, you don't stink, but there is one aspect of choosing cell phone plans that I have never heard addressed on your show. The issue is the advantage of having two entirely separate cell phone providers in the event of storm-related utility outages. In 2012, when Hurricane Sandy slammed into the Northeast, I lost my landline phone service that the cable company provided, and my neighbor lost their landline service phone company provided and their cell service. The one remaining phone service out of four was my cell service from a different provider than my neighbor's. Fortunately, I had two working cell phones from my cell phone provider and was able to lend one to my neighbor. The ability to communicate in a five-day-long situation of when all utilities are out, including electricity, was extremely helpful. My wife and I now have three different cell phone providers, which increase our odds of surviving storm outages. This diversity is even more important to households without landlines. Thanks, Bill.
Bill, I'm really sorry you went through Superstorm Sandy. People are still trying to recover in a lot of the Northeast from Superstorm Sandy. And on the idea of having multiple providers for an emergency, that is very wise. Now, the suggestion we got most often after Superstorm Sandy was the value of shortwave radio, and that works in almost all circumstances as a standby backup that doesn't have an ongoing cost. On the thing you're talking about having a backup cell phone service, you can go to like Walmart and buy a cell phone for one of the major carriers other than who you're with and buy, let's say, a year's service at a very low cost and just have it sitting in a drawer in the event there is a natural disaster or other emergency.
Clark likes to promote his off-brand cheap cell phone plans, but he never rarely promotes to call to get discounts with your current provider. Example, I'm still on Verizon. Why? I have six phones, 22 gigs of shared, and pay only $131 a month with all fees. That's $22 a month each. I call monthly asking for customer retention, as they seem to be the only representatives that can give the deepest discounts. This goes for internet, satellite, and cable. Only those who call in get the discounts. Wish Clark would promote to have listeners call for the discounts prior to advising them to go to off brands. If everyone dumped Verizon, they would lower their prices, but those who will not leave may not know a simple phone call can save them tons. And if the majority of them start doing this, that's what will have the same effect as permanently lowering prices, Michael.
Michael, that is a great suggestion, not just for cell phone service, but also for pay TV, for internet connection, for any type of ongoing technology, negotiating, if you have the patience to do so, will save you a lot of money. I'm very impressed, though, that six people on your plan can get by with a total of 22 gigs. In my family, 22 gigs go in about 48 hours.
Clark was railing about the fact that some whole life insurances end, in quotes, at age 100. And he went on to say then that the insurance companies keep your money. This is not my understanding of what happens. The policy at age 100 would pay out, possibly to the insured, but nevertheless, the insurance company doesn't keep the money. There may be reasons to dislike whole life insurance, but don't falsely accuse the insurers of keeping money when that's not the case. While I'm an actuary, I'm not a life actuary, but I've had some exposure to the basics of how life insurance works.
So what happens, thank you, what happens is that the insurer pays the cash value at that time, which will usually be a great deal less than the actual face amount of the policy that would pay at time of death. Plus, it also triggers a tax event. Insurers have had a very easy way to fix this by having the policies terminate at age 135. I don't know anybody who's living to 135, but insurers have been piggy on this and have failed their policyholders and cheated them.
Free cruise advice. Clark, how could you not know this? My husband and I have saved a lot of money by applying your advice. However, on an episode of Clark Stinks, a listener submitted a very valid complaint that you did not give a reasonable advice on how to get discounts on cruises. Clark, I believe I am a cheaper cheapskate than you. My husband and I have gotten three free cruises, and it has nothing to do with getting stocks in the cruise company. All you have to do is get a rewards card for the cruise line. My mother-in-law has a Royal Caribbean card, and we have Carnival Rewards, and put all of our expenses each month on it. Each normal purchase is 1 point per dollar, and each purchase through the credit card online website can be up to 8 or more points per dollar. We only put our basic expenses on and stick to our budget, so we have no running balance. We pay off the balance at the end of each month. There is no annual fee. We get a free cruise every 2 or 3 years. Please tell your listeners about this provision, because you don't have to buy overpriced stocks to get a minuscule discount. As long as you spend responsibly, you can get free vacations with rewards credit cards.
Thank you. And I didn't know my son was now posting the Clark Stinks, because he's been all over me trying to get me to get the cruise line credit card for, he wants Royal Caribbean. And I am so glad that you've been able to turn that into free cruises every other year.
And also, there have been a lot of questions, not stinks, about airline rewards cards. What do you think about that if you fly a particular airline and you get offered all those extra miles? Are they worth it?
If you fly a particular airline a lot, there's a real benefit to you getting that airline reward card if you, in addition, have a significant charge volume per month, somewhere in the range of $5,000 or so dollars a month to make the huge annual fee on an airline card work for you. There is an exception to that, though. If you like to check bags, with the full fare airlines, you often get a free check bag by having their card, and that will obviously negate that huge annual fee on the airline card. I want to hear from you. Please go to Clark.com and go to our Clark Stinks board and let me know where I've come up short for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Keith is with us on the Clark Howard Show. And Keith, you're moving.
Well, we're planning a move in the next 18 months to 2 years, Clark. So great to talk with you.
Well, great to have you here. How can I be of help with this upcoming move? And you are an advanced planner that you're thinking all this through.
Absolutely. Well, we own our home outright, and my wife and I have discussed the possibility of renting it versus selling it to get the revenue to offset the revenue we're going to be spending in the new town we're going to be living in. She thinks we should sell it. I want to rent it. That's because I know the rental business in this town, so I've been very successful at it. And I really feel that if we rent it, the value of the home will go up, as well as the, just offsetting the different costs.
Well, I love rental properties, but there are several reasons that probably makes your wife right in this case. Sorry. How far away are you moving?
We're going to be moving about 7 hours away by car.
Yeah, that would strongly lend itself to you selling the property, just because it's so hard to manage a rental property from any great distance away. You start looking more than 2 hours away, and it just gets to be more of a hassle for you, unless you have a reason that you would routinely and regularly be going back to where you live now once you move. I would say that, just for simplicity's sake, and this has nothing to do with maybe you becoming a landlord in the town you're moving to.
Right.
But there's another factor. How much gain has there been from what you paid for it versus what it's worth today?
Quite a bit of gain.
Oh, then sell it.
Okay.
Because the gain is tax-free up to $500,000 in gain if you sell it now. If you let it reclassify over time as a rental property, all that embedded gain becomes taxable to you.
Oh, okay.
So it really makes sense to follow your wife's lead and just always remember your wife's always right. Things go so much better in life when you remember that. And you sell this property, you can then pay cash for the next one. I mean, there's no virtue in you taking out a loan. And then ultimately, once you get settled in your new community, if you end up staying there and you learn that town, you like being a landlord, you have that mentality like I do, then there at some point, when you've identified a good purchase for a rental property, you buy one there. Glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you stretching every last dollar so you can save more and spend less. And don't let anybody ever rip you off. So we got to talk here. There an unknown, I don't know, there's so many different figures on how many people in America are in some form of adjustable rate mortgage. The most common number I've seen is somewhere around 1 in 5, 1 in 6 people are today in an adjustable rate mortgage instead of a fixed rate. And this is a dicey time for you to be in an adjustable rate mortgage. The reason is that the adjustable rate loans carry, obviously, a floating rate that, depending on the loan you have, resets every so often. Could be after a 5-year period, it adjusts every year after that. Could be 7 year could be 3 years fixed, then floats every year after that. But the trends are not your friend right now on an adjustable rate mortgage, because the Federal Reserve feels confident with the new employment figures. The official unemployment rate in the United States is 4.3. The one I like, which is U6, which I think gives a better reading, is about double that. But it's still a massive improvement from where unemployment has been in the United States. And there were extreme measures the Federal Reserve did to keep the world financial system from melting down last decade that they're just now starting to wind down. And that gradually will lead to higher mortgage rates. So being in a floating rate is way too risky. In addition to that, fixed rate loans are a real deal. 15-year loans for people with good credit scores are back in the twos. 30-year loans are in the threes, upper threes, like somewhere around 3.75%, 3.875% for people with good credit scores. And so, and by the way, the spread has stayed unusually large between 15-year loans and 30-year loans. So going into, if you can swing the payment, going into a 15-year fixed rate is doubly to your advantage right now, because not only are you out of debt in half the time, but the interest rate you pay is substantially lower. So it's a real benefit to doing that. So the adjustable rate is really a dangerous game to be in. Even if the initial rate is at or below the 15 or 30-year loan. Because even if people intend to stay in a home a set number of years, human nature being what it is, we underestimate how long we're going to stay in a home. So you might intend we're only going to be there 4.5 years. And then 9 years later, you're still in the house. So why tempt fate when fixed rates are so low? Then there's an additional complicating factor. If you have an adjustable rate, most adjustable rate loans are set based on something known as the London Interbank Offered Rate, known as LIBOR. And it's been a massive corruption scandal in banking that the big banks have been manipulating the LIBOR in order to be able to charge more on loans. So they've been making up the rate to rip you off. And so LIBOR, as a consequence, is no longer going to exist, which then leaves you at who knows what with how an adjustable rate loan will reset. So every factor out there is tending to support a move to a fixed rate. And that's where I think you should head on your mortgage. If you were in an adjustable rate and now you're like what I talked about, well, we thought we were going to move, but now we're more likely to stay. Take advantage of these low rates that exist today and get into one of these 15s. If you can't handle that, at least get into a 30-year fixed rate. Julie joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Julie. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you, Clark?
Great, thank you. You want to talk about retirement funds?
I do. My husband and I are in our 40s, and we have a couple, like 401ks, that from different places that my husband's been employed that are invested. We do pretty much all target date mutual funds, and because of our age, we've picked mainly the 2035 funds. And I was just checking in on them, and I was surprised to see that in one of them, there was actually a 93% allocation for stocks. And I thought, well, that seems different than what I had thought. Like, I was used to that 100 minus your age would give you perhaps your percent that you should have in stock allocation. But then I did a little research, and I found a few articles where they said they might be moving that to maybe more of a 120 minus your age for figuring that out. And I was
right. That's become a common thing. Do you know why some of the models have gone to 120? Is because people are living longer than the original assumptions were based.
Okay.
So that's why. But one of the things affecting target date funds right now is one of the pieces of what the target date funds tended to use would be a significant emphasis on bonds. Well, there's a big belief that there's been all the buzz about are stocks overvalued or stocks in a bubble or whatever. But the smart money on Wall Street is much more worried about bonds being in a bubble, that they are frightfully overvalued. So where normally there might be in a target fund that's geared towards year 2035, there might be a significant percent that would be in bonds, maybe 30, 40% potentially, more like maybe 30. Right now, there'd be a desire to lower that because of the risk that bonds will fall in value.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I was curious because it just, I thought, well, is that more risk than we should be taking for our age?
So this whole thing about risk is so hard because, you know, a lot of people were overly invested in stocks back in 2007 and 8 and ended up not being able to stomach the declines they were seeing and bailed right into the teeth of a huge decline in stock values and then missed the big run-up that's happened since early 09 till today, where values have basically quadrupled in a blink. You know, in stock investing, 8 years is a blink. So it's hard. So really, it's more a question of how comfortable you and your husband are with risk, how well you think you could sleep at night if looking out a little more than 15 years from when you anticipate retiring, seeing the values drop. So if the two of you say, we would freak out, you know what I would do? This is going to be weird.
Okay.
I would pretend that your retirement is in 2025 or 2030.
Okay.
And change the nature of what your portfolio looks like to a more conservative one.
Okay. That's something I was thinking about myself. So, okay. That sounds like we might be in that that zone of that might relieve some worry for us.
And I probably just upset people who do financial planning and allocation so much to no end. But what really matters is you and your husband have to be comfortable and sleep well at night.
I agree.
So that would be how I'd mitigate that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your advice.
Sure. And best to both of you. The most important thing, it sounds like you, both of you are all in on, and that is putting as much money as you can aside for retirement so that you can meet that goal of having a comfortable retirement in 2035. Elizabeth's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Clark. How are you today?
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. And congratulations on being a freshly minted college graduate. What's your degree in?
Thank you. Construction Management and Accounting.
No way, no way.
Yes, sir.
So you have two majors, or did you major and a minor?
It's actually two majors and a minor. So it's a management degree with a construction emphasis minor and an accounting degree.
Wow. You just wanted to make sure that no matter what, you were going to be highly sought after in the job market.
Yes, that's my plan.
Great. Well, how can I be of help? It sounds like you got it all together.
Yes, I hope so. So I'm graduating, and graduates know student loans. My parents have saved for me from day one, basically, and they're gifting me my car, and then I won't really have any bills until my current contracts are up. My parents don't want to break any contracts until they end, so I kind of want to be able to pay for my children's college one day. I want to have a healthy retirement fund, and I want to be able to travel some, so I wanted some advice on going into the workforce, what should I be looking for, and what should I kind of do to put me on the path of how I want my financial life.
Well, especially because your expenses are going to be so low from your first job forward.
Yes.
If you're offered a 401k and they offer two flavors, which most employers will offer both, either a traditional 401k or a Roth 401k, go Roth 401k if that's available to you.
Okay.
And put in the maximum you are allowed to put in by that employer.
Okay.
That is the most important thing, to do that right out of college and do that consistently. Your parents created an enormous buffet of options for you because they had been such diligent savers.
Yes.
And you have learned that and benefited from that from them. So now repeat that cycle. And in your early 20s, absolutely hands down, the most important thing is to do the retirement plan at work. And because your expenses are so very low, also do a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And you do, and if you don't have a 401k offered where you go to work, at least do the full annual contribution you're allowed to a Roth IRA, which is $5,500 a year.
Okay.
And it, you start off young, saving all that money. It makes a big difference. Now, as far as vacations, I would love it if you take a certain percent of your pay and put it where it's a split thing, where a portion, maybe 5% of your check, whatever, goes into a vacation savings account at a credit union every month.
Okay.
And they just call that split deposit of a paycheck. And so you're automatically building up that savings into a vacation fund, and you have that money for you that you can pay cash for a vacation. And the more motivated you are to take vacations, the more of your pay you'll divert into that, and the more you'll save, and the more trips you'll get to take. Great for you. John joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, John. How are you doing today?
Thank you for your taking my call.
Certainly.
I really appreciate your help. I hope I get to know your show many years earlier. The question I have is, right now, my financial service person, you know, review my overall situation, and he recognized that I'm missing a earthquake insurance. I'm in a California state. So he asked me to go to my agent and start looking into the quoting process. And during the meantime, I'm using your website and look up, you know, who is the best insurer versus the worst. And it happened that the agent that I go through used three different companies for my auto, my home insurance, and my umbrella.
Wow, wait. Did I hear this right? You were with not one company, not two companies, but your insurance is divided up among three different providers.
That's correct.
That's very unusual. Very unusual. Let me tell you why that's so unusual. Many times insurers offer what are called tying deals, where if you bring more than one of your insurance products to them, you know, two, three, whatever, how many different ones, as you bring more products, they give you a lower rate on each of those products to capture more of your business. So you're potentially missing discounts by having your insurance placed with three different firms.
Absolutely. That's what I thought too. And not only that, as I reviewed the current insurance coverage I have, I found out some coverage mistakes, meaning I'm getting something that is not needed, like the umbrella insurance coverage versus the deductible. They should be in sync, but they are not. So I'm paying more than I needed. So that kind of situation started to happen, and I don't feel really good about this agent and how he set it up for me. So now that's where I come to you for help.
So you're a free agent from this agent now. You want to go shop the market. Well, you know,
exactly.
If you've looked on my website, you know the first question I have for you is, did you serve or do you serve in the U.S. military?
No, sir.
So that would eliminate USAA. So I would like for you to at least get a quote from Amica Mutual, A-M-I-C-A, Mutual, go ahead.
That's what exactly I did. I because that's the first one in line that, you know, the highest one, and I go right to Amica. I go through, you know, an hour or so conversation with the agent. He gave me a quote across everything. But majority of them are a little bit more expensive than what I have. So I'm wondering, and I understand there is a value having a good insurance company when I indeed they will help me out versus, you know, fight tooth to nail just to get my, you know, whatever I deserve for the coverage. So I'm wondering from your experience, you know, what kind of percentage, if it's a 5% more, yep, that makes sense. Or if it's 10%, oh, that's a little bit too much.
I would even go, to be with one of the best insurers out there, I would even go 25% above what you're paying right now. I think because you have insurance for when something goes wrong. And when something goes wrong, you want to be with an insurer that's actually going to be there for you. And so that's why, as cheap as I am, you'll hear me repeatedly say, for insurance, I'm willing to pay more if necessary to be with a good company. Now, with Amica, the first year you pay extra to basically buy in to be an owner of it. And then after that, your premiums actually are lower and they give you back rebates each year. So the first year is the roughest with them. Yeah. How much more was Amica versus the three companies in total year?
So the difference between the Amica and what I'm having right now, the worst case scenario is only 10% difference.
Oh, I would pay that 10% without even thinking about it. I would switch to Amica and be really glad you did. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. I want you to know that I appreciate so much that you've just tuned into our podcast, that you had faith in the information and advice you get. You want more information from us? One of the best ways to get Clark Smart is with our free newsletters, Clark Daily, Clark Deals, and Travel Escape. Sign up now. You'll be able to unsubscribe at any time if you think I'm wasting your time. Go to clark.com/newsletters.